Please turn with me to Matthew chapter 13 this morning. Matthew has conveniently taken all the parables of Jesus and put them into one chapter. Well, he put them in one place and somebody else added the chapter marker for it. And following in last week's footsteps, we're going to march through this entire chapter, 58 verses, in 1 week. And last week I said it would be a long sermon and you told me it wasn't a long sermon. Big mistake, that's right. Big mistake. Why does Matthew put all of Jesus' parables in one place? I mean, sometimes you get the impression, and I've hoped I've destroyed that for you, that when you read the book of Matthew, it's all chronological. It's not. Please don't read it chronologically. It's ordered by theme. So Matthew's taken all the things that Jesus said about one subject and he's lumped them together in the Sermon on the Mount or the place of the parables. It's okay. You aren't allowed to think that way, but it was okay for them to think that way. It was no trouble for them to do that, to order a material by theme. And that's what we have here. In verses 1 and 2, the setting is set. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea. Here is he, just sitting by the sea, talking to people. I'm going to do that when I retire. And great crowds gathered about him so that he got into a boat and sat down, and the whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying. So here he was. There was too many people gathered around that he had to create a natural amphitheater by backing out into the water. Now, I am not going to read this chapter for you in order. I'm going to organize it by theme. Yes, I learned from Matthew. What I'm going to do is I want to put the thoughts that go together, together. And it's fine to read it that way, but I want to do this for a different reason. I want to answer the question up front, why parables? That's the question I want to answer up front, rather than just jump into a parable and then have the disciples say, Jesus, why are you doing this? I want to answer that question for you first, so you get that all clear in your mind, and then when we do the parables, you'll be prepared to understand them better. Okay, you won't be like the disciples who had to have them explained later on. The true meaning will just jump to you and you will be enlightened. So, I want to answer the question, why parables first? Why did Jesus speak in parables? And I'm going to touch this first part where I read from Matthew 13:9. I'm taking the last, very last part of the parable and I'm putting it there. And I want your brain to cue this now. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Jesus says this all the time. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. And he who has eyes to see, let him see. Okay? And this should be bringing something back to your mind from last week's sermon. And you're saying, no, it doesn't, Darren. I will tell you in a few minutes. Okay. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Then the disciples came to him and said, why do you speak to them in parables? Okay? This is a very important question to understand. And that's why I got to cover it first. And he answered them, to you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven. But to them it has not been given. Remember I said there's two kinds of people in the world, those in the kingdom and those who aren't. For to the one who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. This is why I speak to them in parables. Because seeing they do not see, and hearing, oh, he has ears to hear, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. Indeed, in their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, that says, you will indeed hear, but never understand, and you will indeed see, but never perceive, for this people's heart has grown dull, and with their ears they can barely hear, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and turn, which means repent, and I would heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. Truly I say to you, many prophets and righteous people longed to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and do not hear it. Jesus speaks to the people in parables, in order to fulfill the prophecy of Isaiah. All these things Jesus said to the crowds in parables. Indeed, he said nothing to them without a parable. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet, "I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter what has been hidden since the foundation of the world." Why does Jesus speak in parables? Some things Jesus said were given in everyday illustrations. And you'll often hear people, a lot of Christians say that, Jesus just spoke in the things everyday people understood. He talked about farming, everybody understood farming. He talked about fishing, everybody understood fishing. And they often will relate that to the parables of Jesus. And they couldn't be more wrong about why he does it. They'll often say Jesus did it so that he'd make the ideas of the kingdom so easy for them to understand. But Jesus is not saying them in parables so that people understand. Jesus is saying he speaks to the people in parables to deliberately make it harder for them to understand. I'm going to start speaking in parables, right? He's like, oh no, we don't need you to be more difficult to understand. It's commonly misunderstood that Jesus spoke using these illustrations to make things easier. And sometimes he did, but not always. Jesus is giving the rationale here behind his teaching. It's really more important to understand why he speaks in parables than to even understand the parables themselves. You know, I really don't care if you remember the parables, but I do care that you remember why he spoke in parables. Like, that doesn't make any sense. It will in a few minutes. If it doesn't, I'll tell you a parable. The parables are easy to understand. They really are. And each one kind of has this little key to unlocking them. And the key to unlocking these parables in this chapter is virtually the same thing in every single one. And the reason I can tell is Jesus starts them all the same. The kingdom of heaven is like. What do you think you're supposed to try to do in each one of these parables? It's just understand how the little story fits the kingdom. That's all you have to do. And it's actually pretty easy if that's all you're trying to do. You have to, though, Jesus says, seek Christ, seek him. You must seek the king in order to understand the parable about the kingdom. The parables about the kingdom don't make any sense if you're rejecting who Jesus is. It's pretty simple. Now, note, the position of this explanation of the parables, Jesus is speaking to the people in parables, and he's saying that he speaks to the people in parables to fulfill the prophecy of Isaiah. The prophecy of Isaiah came because the people hadn't recognized that God was king. And here's Isaiah in the temple, and he says, in the year that King Uzziah died, the king Hezekiah, when he died, I was in the temple doing my priest stuff, and God shows up in this vision as being king. And he says, Isaiah, I have a job for you. I want you to go preach doom, gloom, and judgment on the people. And Isaiah says, that's a cheery job. How long do I have to do it? And God says to Isaiah, until everything's wiped out. Hooray. And then you have this quotation in here about the people will see, but they won't understand what's going on. They will hear, but they won't change. And the purpose of that is that they will be destroyed. That they would come under the judgment of God. And Jesus is taking that and he's saying, this is Israel. Now, how many people remember what I talked about last week? Okay. In the last chapter, the Pharisees had just determined that they were going to destroy Jesus. And so we talked about how Israel could come into the judgment of God and the Gentiles could come into the blessing of God. So following that chapter that shows the judgment of God coming on them, Matthew places the section on the parables with Jesus saying, now, I am going to teach you in parables so that the judgment of God actually does come upon you. You see, it's all tied together. And as I said before, why is it tied to that? It's tied to the very prophecy, the very vision that demonstrated that God was the king. And here, because again, we're using the prophecy of Isaiah, it's showing Jesus is the king of the kingdom. Until you get that, you can read it and not understand it. You can see it and not get it. And you're under the judgment of God. In other words, in order to really understand the kingdom, you have to first of all see who the king is. And until you accept Christ as the king, The kingdom doesn't make any sense. Let's talk about the people's response to Jesus' parables. And you get this later on in the chapter, right at the end. Look at the verses 51, 52. The people's response to Jesus' teaching. Jesus asked his disciples, "Have you understood all these things?" "Oh yeah, sure, we got it. Now that you've explained it to us. Have you understood all these things?" They said to him, "Yes." And he said to them, "Therefore every scribe who's been trained for the kingdom of heaven is like a master of a house who brings out of his treasure what is new and what is old." And when Jesus had finished these parables, he went away from there, and coming to his hometown, he taught them in their synagogues so that they were astonished. And they said, "Where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty works? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary?" We know this guy. That wasn't in the Bible, but it's in it. "And are not his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? And are not all his sisters with us? Where then did this man get all these things?" And they took offense at him. But Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor except in his hometown and in his own household." It means people don't listen to you once because they think they know you so well. "And he did not do many mighty works there because of their unbelief." So now we have two responses, okay? The response of the disciples and the response of these other people, okay? The ones that didn't believe. So some people have understanding. That's the one response. "Do you understand everything that I'm telling you?" "Oh yeah, we get it." The disciples claim they did. And Jesus says, "Now that you understand, you're like the person who can bring treasure out and share it." You see? You can take the Old Testament and you can show how it talks about the king and the kingdom. "Not only can you do it," Jesus says, "you're obligated to do it." He says, "Now that you understand the kingdom, you're obligated to share that truth, to share the treasure of the kingdom." Now, the other people were offended by Jesus. And it says they didn't believe because they had a wrong view of who Jesus was in the kingdom. They just, "You're not the king, you're just a carpenter." You see, you start with the wrong idea of who Jesus is, it's going to lead to the end result that you don't have faith. They didn't believe. And because they didn't believe, what happens to them? They come under the immediate judgment of God. The immediate judgment. It happens immediately in their case. They didn't believe, and Jesus withheld teaching them. He withheld doing miracles among them. He left them. Up until the time, they were seeing it. "Wow, look at the miracles. Who is this? He teaches with wisdom. Ah, he's nobody." And then that nobody did nothing for them and left. Immediate judgment of God. The signs, the miracles that he did, could have led them to greater faith. If they just would have looked at them with faith and their purpose to show who Jesus was, they could have had so much more. But they had this little bit of knowledge of who Jesus was through the miracles and the teaching, and they rejected it. And it led to God rejecting them. Did I make that clear why Jesus spoke to the people in parables now? Okay, I want to make sure you got that before we move on, or you'll be like, "Wait a minute, you were going to tell us something and we didn't get it." Jesus spoke to the people in parables so that they wouldn't get it. Furthermore, he spoke to them in parables so that when they didn't get it, they had two options. One option was to be like the disciples that went to Jesus afterward and said, "Jesus, that story you told out there was fascinating. What did it mean?" Okay, that's the story of the disciples. They'd ask them what it meant. They didn't get the parables either. They didn't understand them. That was the purpose of them. Jesus didn't want people to understand them because it would separate the people who went and asked Jesus, "What does it mean?" from the people who said, "We don't need you around here." That's the whole point. If you don't understand and you go to Christ for more understanding, the parable did its job. So to understand parables, what does it teach about the kingdom? And then please, please, oh please, please, number two here. Oh, unless you want to be a disaster when it comes to interpreting the Bible and parables, get number two. Not every detail matters. This is the number one problem with people when they try to go through the parables of Jesus. They try to make every part of the story mean something. And if you try to do that, number one, you will go insane. Because sometimes the details change halfway through the story. And you'll say, wait a minute, how can it be this and that? And your head will explode. There was a number two there. Number two, you will botch the whole story. These are not allegories. You know, in an allegory, you can say, this means that, and that means this, and this means that. This is a parable. The whole purpose was, you didn't get it. Okay, if you go, Jesus, I don't see how this part matches this part. Great. Wonderful. You're on the right track. Okay, now note again. I'm changing the order of the material. I'm jumping all over this chapter, okay? Because if you look at the order of the chapter is Jesus tells a story and the disciples say, what did that mean? And you have this whole back and forth and I've taken all the content and moved it. But I've also changed the order of the parables because I want to display them by their ideas and not exactly the order that's here. And I'm not cheating. I'm just doing it that way. It's okay. I'm allowed to. This first couple of parables, they show about the growth of the kingdom and the value of the kingdom. They're in pairs. They're very tiny little parables. And I want to get them out of the way first before we get into the big ones, the ones that the disciples didn't understand. Okay, the growth of the kingdom, number one, the tree. He put another parable before them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed that a man took and sowed in his field. I'm thinking, you know, you picture, I got this grain of mustard seed. You know, when you imagine somebody sowing, you imagine them just throwing it out there. But we're focusing on one particular little seed, teeny tiny little mustard seed, little bitty one. And you imagine the guy digging a hole in the ground and putting it in and burying it up and putting a little water on there. It's the smallest of all seeds, but when it's grown, it's larger than all the garden plants and becomes a tree so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches. Okay. The story is the small seed grows into a large plant. Okay, that's the main part of the story. Okay, simple. Don't get caught up in too many of the details. Some people go, well, the birds of the tree mean this and that and all this stuff. The plant is able to support birds and nests. That's enough. Okay, stop there. The explanation, Jesus is saying, this kingdom that I'm teaching, we got opposition, we got people saying it's no good, I'm not doing miracles with these people anymore. All this stuff's happening. There's people that believe it, people that don't. We're starting out small, guys. We're starting out real small. But it's not going to stay that way. It started only with Jesus. One seed, one person on the face of the earth, and it's going to grow into something large. Jesus only uses the mustard seed because it's so small. And regardless of how the kingdom looks at the beginning, Jesus says the end result is what matters. That's it. That's the whole parable. Simple, huh? Growth of the kingdom, number two, leaven. He told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven that a woman took and hid in 3 measures of flour till it was all leavened. I mean, how simple is that? Now, here's an example of why you need to be really careful when you interpret the Bible. Some people say, anytime you see leaven in the Bible, it means sin. Oh, come on. You know, this is a prime example why that's not true. You know, whenever somebody says, every time you see something in the Bible, that's probably a good time to really become critical of what they're about to say next. Unless it's for me. Oh, just kidding. I'm just kidding. What's the story? A little leaven mixes into a large amount of flour. Okay? Have you ever cooked bread with yeast in it? Okay? And you know how it is. You mix it all up and you put it in to the oven and it cooks in there and half the loaf rises and the other half stays small, right? No, it doesn't do that. What happens? It all rises equally. Unless you cooked it like I do, then it all rises equally. All right. Doesn't all rise the amount you'd like it to rise, but it all rises evenly. And the point is, even you take a little leaven, it goes everywhere in the whole mix. Okay? It's about growth, but it's a different kind of thing. It's not like the tree starting out small and getting big. This one's simple. It's just going to spread everywhere. The kingdom of God is going to spread everywhere. Throughout the whole world. That's what Jesus was saying. And we've had this touching on Gentiles in the last chapter. Now Jesus has these parables about it's going to spread. It's going to be It's going to be big enough. It's going to permeate the whole world. In this case, it's not the size or the growth. It's the idea that the kingdom will permeate the world, which is what we see it continuing to do even today. Next parable, the value of the kingdom. Number one, again, a pair here about the value of the kingdom. This one is about the treasure. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and covered up. Then in his joy, he goes and sells all that he has and buys the field. See, he couldn't just take the treasure out of the field. That would be stealing. But if he purchased the field, he would get everything that it contained. And so that's all the story's about. Very simple story again. But he sold everything he had. That's the crucial thing. He sold everything he had in order to purchase the field. And then he gained the treasure along with the field. Simple story. What's the explanation? The kingdom's worth a lot. It's a great value, all right? It's worth selling things in order to get. It's a treasure. Next one, the pearl. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls who, on finding one pearl of great value, went and sold all that he had and bought it. It's like the last one, but it's a little different. A little different angle to this one. This is a merchant. He's looking for pearls. He's wanting to find this fine, valuable object, and he finds that one, and he sells everything else in order to get it. Everything, that he may obtain this one thing. The kingdom is more valuable than anything else. That's all. It's worth giving up everything in life for. It's worth losing everything else that you may gain it. Unlike the field, the merchant here pays full price. He wasn't being sneaky about it. In this case, the merchant knows the value and he'll pay anything to get it. And it's still worth it. Now, one of the most famous parables of Jesus, the sower. And I'm going to go through the different soils, and I'm going to give you the story and the explanation. I've split them instead of giving you all the story and then the explanation, because I imagine it's familiar to you anyway. And he told them many things in parables, saying, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured them. And then later on, when the disciples said, Jesus, please tell us what this means, this is what he said. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in the heart. This is what was sown along the path. Be ever seeing and not perceiving. Be ever hearing and never understanding. Judgment of God. So the sower, he goes out to sow, and people say, well, what's he sowing? He's sowing the news of the kingdom. Okay? That should be fairly obvious. He's telling people about the kingdom. And either you receive the kingdom or you don't receive. There's something in there. So the sower, some people say, well, Jesus is the sower. You know, it doesn't matter who the sower is. I mean, initially Jesus is the sower, but now you're the sower if you're out there telling people the news of the kingdom. So don't get hung up on the details. Somebody goes out and tells people about the kingdom. Some of the seeds fall in the path, and the birds come and eat them up. And Jesus just said, what does that mean? It wasn't understood. They just didn't get it. They didn't get the kingdom. They missed it. Because they didn't understand it, the evil one took away what little they did have told to them. Now, maybe they didn't understand it because it wasn't told properly. The second one, rocky ground. Other seed fell on rocky ground where they did not have much soil. And immediately they sprang up since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched. And since they had no root, they withered away. As for what was sown on rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet he has no root in himself, but endures for a while. And when tribulation or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately he falls away. The rocky ground doesn't have enough soil. If there's shallow soil and there's a rock underneath it, it's nice and warm and the seed germinates quickly. Point is, it sprang up quickly. That's what Jesus says. And when the heat of the sun did come, it cooked these little plants because they didn't have a deep root to get them what they needed. And so they withered away. And Jesus says, the word is heard by these people and they receive it with joy. And this is the first one where you have to start saying to yourself, well, wait a minute. What do these things mean? Because if we're talking about the kingdom goes out there and these people heard it and they believed it and they had joined it, what's this falling away part? Be very careful. This is a parable, okay? This is not an allegory. Not everything's going to mean what you think it means, straight up. We'll get to the full meaning at one point. Without root in your life. So the person that hears, oh yeah, I can have my sins forgiven and go to heaven. Who doesn't want that? All right? I'm in. Oh, but along with that, Jesus says, you will have tribulation. Remember Jesus saying that? That part they didn't get. Maybe they weren't told that. Tribulation leads them to fall away. Persecution for the kingdom leads them to fall away. Oh, this isn't what I signed up for. You see, now we're getting that back to that point I said the first time. Maybe they didn't understand the whole message. There's still a lack of understanding here. They hear part of the message. They hear something of the message that they like, but they haven't heard the completeness of what the message is. Or they would have heard, hey, part of following Christ means persecution. It means sacrificial love. Are you in for that? Let me think about that. You know, that's one of the things I really like about sharing the gospel that way. I've had people respond to me that way. I need to think about it. I'm not sure about the sacrificial love part. You know what? I like that. That is exactly the same response Jesus got from people. But if you just tell people, hey, do you want to go to heaven? Sure, I'm in. You'll get lots of people responding. But they're not going to be the kind Jesus wants. Some seed fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. As for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. So again, you have a plant that grows, just like the last one. The thorns, though, grow up and choke them. And Jesus says, this is the cares of the world, the deceitfulness of riches. And what happens to the plant? The plant grew, but it was unfruitful. And if a plant is unfruitful, ones that you plant for food, it is essentially worthless. It's no different than a weed. The cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches. I'd like to think back to the temptation of Jesus. Three areas of temptation. What are they? Bodily appetites, right? Number two, having people like you, the cares of the world, right? Tied up. And the third one is, oh, having your own kingdom. You mean the deceitfulness of riches? Yeah, something like that. See, those things, when you fall into those temptations that Jesus talked to us about in Matthew 4, these are the very things that produce unfruitfulness in life. Unfruitfulness comes from giving into the three areas of temptation. So before we move on to the good soil, I want to look at these reasons that people do not respond to the kingdom. These first soils. The reasons people don't respond to the kingdom. I think the crucial part here is they don't understand what it's about. That's the first one. It falls in the path and the people go, you know, they didn't get it. There hasn't been a clear teaching of what the kingdom is. I think that's a huge problem today. People don't hear what the kingdom's about. That's why I'm in no hurry to tell people what the kingdom's about. I mean, like do an altar call. I don't. You know, ever notice me doing altar calls every week here? I don't do that. And I don't even tell you, pray this prayer and you're going to receive Jesus. I will tell you what it means to be a Christian. You come to become a disciple of Christ. Yes, you ask to have your sins forgiven and all these other things. Because it's a big thing. It's not something I'm going to tell you in 2 minutes and you're going to go, hey, hooray. I want you to contemplate it over time. That way I don't have to worry about you falling away. Perhaps they've not been taught about the benefits of God's value system. The second group, they weren't prepared for difficulty. There's a whole branch of people out there teaching a gospel that leaves that whole section out. Because they're telling you, no, you'll be healthy and you'll be wealthy and everything will go your way. And then when it doesn't, what happens? They ditch it. And you know what has happened then? They've fallen away, and they may never listen to the true gospel ever after that. They were told lies. They found out they were lies. And now they'll never seek truth. And Jesus says it's better for those people who've mistaken taught to have a millstone put around their head and be thrown into the sea. And this third group, they don't bear fruit. And that's an issue of sacrificial love as a value system. That if you communicate that straight up, this is what the life is. This is what you're being called to. You're being called to live a life at the cross. Jesus said that. Whoever wants to come after me must take up his cross and follow me. That's what he said. If we don't include that, we haven't taught what Jesus teaches. They don't bear fruit because they don't want to be sacrificial lovers. Because that's what Jesus says is bearing fruit. Now let's go on to the last one. Other seeds fell on good soil. Thank goodness, right? This was really going bad for a long time for the sower. Other seeds fell on good soil and produced grain. Some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. As for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears the word and, oh, here's the part, understands it. He indeed bears fruit and yields. In one case, 100-fold, in another 60, and in another 30. Point here is, hey, sometimes it works the way it's supposed to. The words were heard and understood. That's so crucial because, you know, in the first three, they weren't understood. They either weren't taught, but in case, let's just say it's being taught properly. They weren't being heard, judgment of God. I don't want to hear it. Fingers in the ears, right? And the evil one snatches it up. Or they didn't understand. They didn't. All three of the first didn't understand something about the kingdom. That's why it's so important to teach the way Jesus taught. Without understanding, you will not produce fruit. And only those who understand will be able to teach the kingdom properly later on, bearing fruit. See, the only way you can go on to produce more is by getting the truth to begin with. Otherwise, what you are is a weed, and you're going to produce more weeds.
Do you have any comments on the
summer? Hey, not every plant bears the same amount. That's it. It's as simple as that. So, you know, don't get sick. Well, you know, I've never led 100 people to Christ. Well, get with it, you know. No. Well, I haven't even done 30. Well, then you might not be good. You know, forget that. Jesus is saying not everybody does the same. Again, simple stuff. This is not rocket surgery. It's simple. Okay. You got that? Okay. The parable of the harvest, or if you want, the parable of the weeds. Again, it doesn't matter what title you give it. It doesn't really matter. He put another parable before them saying, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. Now, mistake to avoid. Don't take the previous story about sowing and transfer any of the ideas to this one. All right? Some ideas might be shared in common, but don't do this. Rule of interpreting parables. All right? There's so many ways to go wrong. Okay. He's planted good seed in his field, but while his men were sleeping, this is no problem against the men, right? It's normal for people to sleep. The point is not that the men were sleeping. The point is that his opponent was sneaky. Okay? His enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared also. And the servants of the master of the house came and said, Master, didn't we put good seed in your field? How come we have weeds? He said to them, an enemy has done this. So the servants said to them, then do you want us to go and gather them? Do you want us to go rip the weeds out right now? No. Lest in gathering the weeds, you root up the wheat along with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, gather the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned. But gather the wheat into my barn. Simple, right? We need an explanation. The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. Okay, so here we go. The field is the world. And the good, see now, you can see why that doesn't match the first story now, does it? Because in the parable of soils, that produced good stuff. But now the world is the soils. You see, you can't just jump around. Okay, the field is the world. The good seed is the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the close of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are gathered and burned with fire, so will it be at the close of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom. Wait a minute! The Son of Man will send angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all lawbreakers, and throw them into the fiery furnace. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. You know, the thing that always grabs me in this one is, wait a minute, are you telling me that we got lawbreakers in the kingdom? Jesus is saying, well, something like that. Remember, this is a parable, okay? Don't get too uptight. If you get uptight, you will misunderstand it. Good seed is sown. And so it's building on the previous story. Now that you know what seed is and you get that idea, we can go on to tell the story. The seed is the truth about the kingdom. And it goes in there and it produces children of the kingdom. People who actually are bearing fruit and living like Christ. The enemy comes and he plants weeds in the field. The weeds, they can come from false teaching, that some kind of sin, it's the bad stuff, okay, whatever it is. False Christianity, something, some value system apart from God's. Use your imagination. All right? If it's evil, that's what it is. Both the plants and the weeds sprout, and they're all in the same field, and they're all growing side by side. And then the problem is discovered. Good seed does not produce weeds. Something happened here. Good seed doesn't produce weeds. If you truly are responding to the truth of the kingdom, you aren't going to produce weed. You aren't going to be a weed. If you are a weed, then you're not in the kingdom. The planting of the weed is done by the enemies. The weeds were not going to be pulled up, though. Why? Well, and here's an important thing to learn here. Why weren't they going to pull the... You'd think it'd be great. Can you imagine if we just went through churches and God just struck everybody dead? He did that in the first century, right? Ananias and Sapphira. Could you imagine if I just said... I'm not really praying this, so don't get nervous. I know some of you are going to be nervous. If we just said, Lord, you know these people. They've all heard the truth, and they're all claiming to be in the kingdom. Just strike them dead if they're lying. Now, aren't you, some of you are saying, oh, pray that prayer. No, I won't pray that prayer. I want to give you more chance. All right? There's always room for another chance. If you're a weed, you should be really nervous. But God says he doesn't do that. He doesn't do that. It's a good thing. It's a merciful thing. It's a gracious thing that he doesn't do that. It gives all the weeds a chance to change what they are, become good. But it's to protect the wheat in the story. It protects the wheat. How does it protect the wheat to let the weeds grow up? At the harvest, the weeds will be destroyed and the wheat will be kept. And Jesus explains the story. Jesus sows good news of the kingdom, and the good seed produces children of the kingdom, people who truly believe, who want to be like Christ. The devil sows the weeds, and the weeds are the children of the devil, in whatever shape they come in. You know, you're only a child of God or you're a child of the devil. You say, well, I'm not a child of the devil. Well, not you, but I mean people out there. You think, why would, they're not the children of, they are the children of the devil. Because the language child of means it's the one you bear the value system of, the likeness of. The harvest is the close of the age. The angels reap and there will be a judgment and the evil ones will be removed and the righteous will go into their Father's eternal kingdom in heaven. The harvest will be plentiful in spite of opposition. That's the other thing to realize there. That's the good news of the story. Jesus is saying, and the weeds won. He's not saying that. He said, and the weeds lost. And there was a great harvest, and it was taken into my Father's kingdom. So there's things in there we don't fully understand, and things in there that are pretty clear. The last one. The parable of the fish net. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was thrown into the sea and gathered fish of every kind. When it was full, men drew it ashore and sat down and sorted the good into containers, but threw away the bad. So it will be at the close of the age. The angels will come out and separate the evil from the righteous and throw them into the fiery furnace. In that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Again, you have like the harvest and the angels doing the job. We have some transfer of the ideas from the one story to the other. This parable is about judgment. That's all it's about. A net is thrown in the sea, and many different fish were caught with it. Once ashore, the fishermen sorted the fish. That's it. Pretty simple. The good they kept, the bad they threw away. At the judgment, the angels will sort good and evil. The good will be rewarded, the evil will be punished. But what strikes me in this one is another element from the previous one. The kingdom of heaven is like a net that gathered fish of every kind. Striking, isn't it? In a way, when I think of the kingdom, I think of those who are truly in the kingdom, you know, real believers. And then there's the people, they think they're in the kingdom, but they're not really in the kingdom. And they really need to get in the kingdom. But in the parables, Jesus allows for us to understand that there's people who think they're in the kingdom, people who name themselves in the kingdom, people who want to be in the kingdom or pretend to be in the kingdom in some way, shape, or form, but they're not really in the kingdom. There's a place for that. The net draws many. And though they're in the, quote, kingdom, they're not in the real kingdom. What's the main point of all this? The parables are a filter that Jesus used to offer his teaching and yet limit it. He could throw a story out there and people would say, ah, that's just the carpenter's son again. He's crazy. I'm going to go do something else. Or they'd say, tell me what it means. And anyone who came to him with wanting a deeper understanding received it. He never hesitated to tell his disciples that. The point of the parables, the kingdom is of great value. It's attacked and unearthed. Sometimes it's difficult to distinguish between the good and the evil, the people who are really in the kingdom and who aren't, the weeds and the wheat. Yet the kingdom is only for those who want it and who seek it and who need it. The kingdom, Jesus said, would grow to influence the whole world, and it's on track to do that. But in order for all this to happen, the kingdom has to be understood, and you have to see that the kingdom is worth more than anything else. And you have to see that rejecting the kingdom has dire consequences. I like the kingdom.